Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. Join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show hosted by HWC founder and homeopath, Debbie Brooke. She invites you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts as we complete reading Samuel Hahnemann's Organon. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Brooke, founder of Homeopathy World Community, and I'm taking some time out in the day to begin with a few words of inspiration, because we really do need it, and to talk about current events, and finally to read the words of Dr. Samuel Hahnemann in his Organon of Medicine. And I want to remind everyone that this is a simple study session and that listeners should always get in touch with their healthcare providers for any needs that they have. Also, we are changing the format of the Organon show, even though the introduction says that we're live Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. We are now going to go to a 1-day-a-week schedule, which will be Monday at noon, most likely at noon, but we're going to be a little bit flexible. And then on Wednesday, there's going to be the one-hour show, How Homeopathy Grows Great Gardens with Kaviraj, agro-homeopath. And on Thursday, we will have our show, Vaccinations and Your Rights in the United States, with expert on vaccine exemptions, attorney at law, Alan Phillips. We're going to go ahead with the inspirations for today, and they are coming right in from Twitter, which seems to be backlogged, and so my tweets are not able to get on. Sometimes, you know, they've stopped using the little icon of the fail whale. It didn't have such a great connotation, but now you just get a message that there are things that are getting held up on the tweets. So this is what I had prepared for the inspiration by Michael Q. Todd. MQ Todd says, tweeting as if you're the person you want to be is great practice and a great focuser for being that person. Therefore, we've got to have some intentions and meditations on what we look like in our ideal state, no matter whether it's tweeting like a bird on Twitter or getting your surroundings in perfect order or just improving your life. We're going to be getting ready for New Year's resolutions. Some of us will be doing that. The second bit of inspiration on Twitter comes from Marcia TWT08, who quotes Eric Fromm, "Creativity requires the courage to let go of certainties. This means to face our uncertainties in life." And we also have that is requoted three times by Twoted and Montana Flynn. Therefore, you can see the power of Twitter as more and more people tweet the message. It goes out exponentially to reach more and more people. And here's a famous Twitter personality, Douglas Chan, who says, "Don't be afraid of the impossible. Make the impossible happen." And we have a lot of things going on in our world today where we think things are impossible. And it's up to us to change that in our mind, in our thoughts, in our words, and in our actions. And I have a quote from the Dalai Lama, which was tweeted originally by SureSandy1 and then retweeted, that's an RT, by Cheryl Berklich. The Dalai Lama says, "We can never obtain peace in the outer world until we make peace with ourselves. And so that one is a really good one, to a good take-home message for us, looking for finding peace within, especially when we see in our outer world so much discord and chaos and disruption. And we're going to be talking a little bit today about places around the globe like Haiti and Pakistan, where they're dealing with natural disasters, with floodings and hurricanes, and what that does to the people in the region. We know that the earthquake in Haiti in January of last year, it's almost been a whole year, and very little has been alleviated there. And now they're dealing with much more devastation from the weather, from flooding. So I would like to tell you a little bit about, well, they're obviously not in a good situation, and the news tells you how hopeless they are. But let's put in a little thought and intention and hope that those who are in charge, those who have the power to make changes, will do so. And one of those, the warning signals for the weather changes comes from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, NOAA.gov. And I wanted to tell you their vision is to create an informed society that uses a comprehensive understanding of the role of the oceans, coasts, and atmosphere in the global ecosystem to make the best social and economic decisions. And we know that is a high goal, to make it actual a reality with the people on the ground, with those who are the in the position to do rescue mission work. That is the hard part. And I know that many have given millions and billions of dollars, and we need to get that money into the right hands and into the right sectors to get it to the people in need. Also, the mission of NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, is to understand and predict changes in Earth's environment and conserve and manage coastal and marine resources to meet our nation's economic, social, and environmental needs. And this is obviously coming from the U.S., and there are other resources and government agencies in other countries that have similar missions and visions for their people. And so we look to that when we go to Google search and try and find what is the weather and what's going on in the area. So I wanted to also mention that the hurricane season in the Atlantic, it begins in June 1st and ends November 30th, which is coming up the end of this month, thank God. And the Eastern Pacific hurricane begins May 15th and also ends November 30th. Right now, there are no tropical cyclones being reported, which means the oceans are calm and clear, except for the hurricanes that just passed through. The history teaches that a lack of hurricane awareness and preparation are common threads among all major hurricane disasters. And by knowing your vulnerability and what actions you should take, you can reduce the effects of the hurricane disaster. And this is an interesting piece of information, that we know that we're vulnerable, and we know, I just heard a radio show called Preparedness and what actions you should do to be prepared. But if you don't have the resources to get prepared, if you're not connected in any way, like the tent people, to any kind of communications or any kind of means of securing a prepared environment or helping yourself through these helpless situations and vulnerabilities, there's not much that these agencies are going to do in terms of getting the word out. It's up to the people who do have the resources to get out and help. We know that hurricane hazards can come from storm surges, high winds, tornadoes, and flooding. This means that it's important to have a plan, so those people who are in a situation should look to protecting their home and the people who live with them in their neighborhood, and what are the safety actions that you can take. And so these types of websites provide guides, but we are at a loss right now because I wanted to talk about internally displaced persons. That's IDP. You're going to see that initial on web pages talking about the persons who have been affected by the floods in Pakistan, by the floods in Haiti, and in other regions around the world. These are the people who are forced to flee their homes, but they're refugees, but they're refugees within their own country's borders. It's a very unusual situation, and they are now living in tent cities, if they even are able to get to a tent city, because there are still multi-thousands of people who don't even have a place for shelter. And there is a website called pakresponse.info, pakresponse.info, to learn a little bit more about what's going on in Pakistan. They have an update for November 4th that thousands of people are still trapped by the floodwaters and require relief assistance. So if you're in any position to assist them in any way, just contact that website. And it's been 3 months since the initial flood disaster hit that region. And they do announce that there is a step up in assistance and distribution of services and materials to help them. Now, what happens when we have this kind of violent weather is that it affects the people in many ways, and one of the ways is the increase in transmission of contagious disease. And we're learning that in Haiti, the aid workers and officials in Haiti are going to have an increase in cholera after the Hurricane Tomas. The storm actually killed 8 people when it struck the Caribbean nation in recent weeks, and the flooding is, I've seen pictures and the water seems to be going down, but there's murky, muddy waters and infected waters, and people are living in that. People are using that for cleansing. I don't know whether they have anything else to drink, and it's not a very pleasant situation. The cholera epidemic has already claimed 500 lives and has infected more than 7,000. I'm hoping that on the Homeopathy World Community Network, we will have more blogging information and discussion about what types of remedies you could use. But, of course, we know obstacles to cure can delay improvement in a person's health. And if the floodwaters are still there, if there's unsanitary conditions, then it's not going to be able to really clean it up. So we need to have sanitation going on there. And they are expecting, due to the bad conditions and sanitation, the increase in cholera, which is a waterborne disease. And there's more risk due to that. So they say that the Hurricane Thomas, although it came through and left this mess, that the tented camps that were around the Port-au-Prince are still okay and they weren't wiped off the map. 1 million Haitians are still displaced by that earthquake. And that is the news from Haiti. There is another place where there's an outbreak of contagious disease, and that's in the Republic of Congo. And on the other side of the map, we've got poliomyelitis with 120 cases of acute flaccid paralysis and already 58 deaths. Half of the cases were reported in the last 2 weeks, with the first case occurring in early October. 2 cases have been confirmed to have been caused by wild poliovirus type 1, and they are still doing laboratory testing. Most of the cases are in young adults. Among those cases for which age data is available, which is 43 cases, at this time, 33 of them are between the ages of 15 and 25 years old. They are young, and only one is under the age of 5. 3 are between the ages of 7 and 13, and 5 cases are between the ages of 26 and 58. The outbreak is due to an imported poliovirus. Congo recorded its last case of indigenous polio in 2000. Thus, it's been 10 years since there was a reported case. And investigations are going on to determine the origination of the virus at this time. And they have particular cities where they're being infected. There's been an alert to the public regarding this, and so the partners which we know typically go in when there's an outbreak of contagious disease include the World Health Organization, UNICEF, and the U.S. Center for Disease Control. At least 3 nationwide vaccination campaigns are expected. So this is going to ramp up the vaccination programs for these regions. And you know how we believe that homeopathy has a part to play, and we do wish that people would be listening to what we can do as preventative regarding homeopathy and the nosodes that have been used for hundreds of years and show effectiveness. And perhaps if we blog it up and talk it up, people will start to listen. And you know that there's also a big push for the influenza vaccination program. You can't walk anywhere without getting bombarded by that. So they are going to continue to do some surveillance in order to minimize the risk of spread of this contagious disease. And that is the news. I wanted to mention also that the Homeopathy World Community is very lively, very active. We've got so many discussions going on, and I'm extremely thankful to all of those professional healthcare providers who are writing about their life, about their experience, about their cases and their knowledge. Many of them are university professors, medical professors, and we just have a very good, welcoming community for those who are promoters and advocators for homeopathy as a medical form of healing. There are a number of discussions dealing with dengue fever. So, you know, we really have at this time on our planet a ramping up of contagious epidemic diseases spreading due to the different conditions and the nature's natural forces. And what can we say about this? I would like to hear your comments and questions and thoughts regarding what's happening on the planet. In a way, the internet and our communication has brought us all so much closer together. We're one big family, one big blue marble, as they say. And whatever we do in one part of the planet affects people in the other part of the planet. And therefore, we need to find ways to get along and to help each other. Dr. Muhammad Rafiq has recently posted a marvelous discussion topic. It's Bhabha Atomic Research Center, the BARC, has developed a medical analyzer to enable objective study of homeopathy. And everyone is always asking about evidence-based homeopathy to prove to the scientific and medical community that homeopathy is more than placebo, even though the dilutions and succussions create such minimal proportions of an active, supposedly active agent. But we know that there is some nanotechnology, they call it, action going on, and I will read you a little bit of what is going on. This is a report on ZNews.com, and this medical analyzer will enable objective study of homeopathy. The article publicizes what really the homeopathic community has been waiting for a long time. Numerous Homeopathy World articles published by many of the homeopathic members regarding their personal research and experimentation with electronic signals from heart rates to pulse to graphic analysis of plants or even the human response shows that homeopathy works. A couple of those people on the network include Dr. Desh Bandhu Bajpai, who does the electrotridoshigraphy, which is ETG technology, and he has a number of videos up showing the graphical analysis of remedies and how they work, and he has the utility and uses of the ETG technology also. It's another video, and he's had some blogs going up there. Dr. Nisanth Nambasan, MD, has posted an article about the management and control of genetic process in cotton plants through homeopathy, and that was a report by Dr. Gangar. And we have, I think, one more. Dr. Devendra Kumar Muntha, MD, has also posted a huge blog about his research, which is showing also the efficacy of homeopathic remedies and their responses in the human body. Therefore, this news publication highlights some of the long-awaited research, even with placebo controls, and specifically demonstrates the response of certain numbers of remedies. Those are sulfur, aconite, napalus, and nux vomica used in potency. And I want to congratulate all the scientists in Mumbai and the Ayush team for three decades of work, which has been in this research field to demonstrate the efficacy of a few of these homeopathic remedies. And once we realize that if it works for one, then it will work for many, many more in this type of research and analysis. The use of the medical analyzer that's developed by the Bhabha Atomic Research Center has shown that it would enable a better understanding of the selective action of homeopathic medicines in different strengths on the human being. And there is a little bit of an explanation. They are using a PPG photoplethysmograph. It's an optically obtained plethysmograph, a volumetric measure of an organ. A PPG is often obtained by using a pulse oximeter, which illuminates the skin and measures changes in light absorption. A conventional pulse oximeter monitors the perfusion of blood to the dermis and subcutaneous tissue of the skin. And there are a couple of images to look at. With each cardiac cycle, the heart pumps blood to the periphery. Even though this pressure pulse is somewhat damped by the time it reaches the skin, it is enough to distend the arteries and the arterioles in the subcutaneous tissue. If the pulse oximeter is attached without compressing the skin, a pressure pulse can also be seen from the venous plexus as a small secondary peak. And so you're going to be seeing these images that look like graphs like an EKG machine would have, and those show the readings, the output of changes in the body. And when you using a homeopathic remedy from you're looking at a controlled placebo where nothing is used, will there be a change in the skin, in the pulse pressure, or are you using a remedy and that is a matching similimum based on Hahnemann's homeopathic organon of medicine? If there is a similimum or a resonance reaction between the remedy and the individual, you're going to see a change. And that's what they're measuring. It's the change in volume that's caused by the pressure pulse and is detected by illuminating the skin with the light from a light-emitting diode, an LED, and then measuring the amount of light either transmitted or reflected to a photodiode. I know this is getting quite scientific and bogged down. Maybe people have left listening after all of this. I don't know. I should check the chat board and the on the network. Each cardiac cycle appears as a peak. And if you take a look at the charts, you're going to see that lift, that little, when it goes up, like when you're taking your blood pressure, because the blood flow to the skin can be modulated by multiple other physiological systems. The PPG can also be used to monitor breathing, hypovolemia, and other circulatory conditions. Additionally, the shape of the PPG waveform differs from subject to subject. That's very interesting. So I'm wondering how they compare, if it is a little bit different. I guess that shows how unique all of us are, like a snowflake. And it varies with the location and manner in which the pulse oximeter is attached. Therefore, they must be very, very systematic in the methods that they use and are able to discern some commonalities of what's happening in those rhythms on the chart, on the output meter, between different people. Research is done by the BARC, the Regional Research Institution of Central Council for Research in Homeopathy, Mumbai, the National Institute of Homeopathy, Kolkata, and F.R. Muller Homeopathic Medical College, Mangalore, have indicated potential use of the physiological variability in fundamental research in homeopathy. So the data is revealing the selective action of the homeopathic medicines in different potencies, especially in the heart rate variability, the HRV, and the blood flow variability, the BFV, and morphology index variability, MIV. And this is said by Dr. Srinath Rao of the FMHMC during a meeting on advanced applications of physiological variability held in the BARC in India. Well, that is really fascinating, and we really applaud them for their work in their research, and hopefully this will continue and there will be more support for it, and perhaps in many other countries around the world they will pick up on this same kind of research. And I thank all those who are listening today on the network and elsewhere. And we, you know, I feel really sad that I don't know how to speak Hindi and all other languages around the world. I could really love to do that, but because we are a world community and English is the most commonly known, used, and learned language, it's best to speak and put your notes in English so that everybody can know what you're talking about and what it is that makes it easier for us all to communicate. And that is the news on the network. Let me see how we're doing for time today. It looks pretty good. I've put the session up from the usual 30 minutes up to an hour, so we can chat a little bit and talk a little bit more at length about inspiration and news and what's going on. Dr. Rajneesh Kumar Sharma has instituted again another discussion regarding placebo, and we've had very, very in-depth discussions about the placebo effect, and I appreciate that he's bringing it up to the surface again so that we can continue to have a discussion and learn more about it, because we really know very little. It's mysterious, and we do use it in homeopathy, and we would like to continue to use it. Something else that's going on around the homeopathic network, and I'd like to ask people to support the Traveling Homeopaths Collective. That's the THC in the UK, because there is a little vote, and you can help them out by clicking your vote, and it will enable them to start a mobile drop, a mobile clinic in the south and west of England by taking homeopathy from the fields that they're currently working in to the streets. And it is a very low-cost clinic. It will benefit so many individuals and communities that cannot afford homeopathy or homeopathic care, or they don't have enough homeopathic professionals, homeopaths, to help the people. And so they're going to have a mobile unit and would like your vote on that. I will post the link up for you on the Small Business Britain website. Thank you for all the work that you're doing. The collective was actually set up in 1990, 20 years ago, to provide a mobile homeopathic clinic to treat people with homeopathy and promote homeopathy at fairs, festivals, and other outdoor occasions. They treat thousands of people every year in festivals such as Glastonbury, Cambridge Folk Festival, and the Big Green Gathering. The clinic offers treatment for acute conditions such as hay fever, sunstroke, sunburn, digestive upsets, coughs, and colds. That's great that they're out there helping on these acute situations where it may be much easier to care for them on a one-time basis. The advice and support that they provide for people with long-term and chronic care diseases is also wonderful that they provide that service. Thank you very much to those people who are involved with that. And it is registered with the Charity Commission since 1997, so I assume it is a nonprofit agency. For those people who are new listeners and who don't know very much about homeopathy, I thought I would do something different today because we have come to about 6 months of the Blog Talk Radio Show and Homeopathy World Community in partnership. So I'd like to give you a little tiny bit of background that Dr. Samuel Hahnemann, who was the one who wrote the Organon of Medicine, began the science of homeopathy in the early 1800s, and his understanding and guideline have been followed with some variations since then. From his observations of sickness and recovery, he posited a vital force that is some powerful force within us, like chi or prana or breath, that would produce symptoms in the body to heal its energetic imbalances. He realized that symptoms are actually good. So when your child gets a fever, you know that their immune system has geared up and is working. It's not something that you want to temper with aspirin or other drugs. You want the body to heal itself, to fight the infection. And once that fever is goes through its cycle and is over, that individual's vital force is strengthened and knows that it can care for itself. And therefore, we are very pleased when we see some symptoms coming up when there is a disease going on within that individual or within the community. They are also, these symptoms are good indicators to evaluate the health status of this unseen energy field. So here we go. It seems that it's something that's not detectable, and yet we receive these signals or symptoms to let us know that something is going on. There are changes, dynamic changes within the individual. The goal for the homeopath is to treat the vital force so it no longer has to produce these uncomfortable symptoms that kind of disrupt a person's life, and therefore the person can live a long and happy life and fulfill their mission on earth when they are strengthened through homeopathic care. The dilutions of herbs, minerals, and body substances were and are given to healthy people. And this is what we call approving. We've been talking about clinical trials and provings in the last number of sessions. And so when the provers take repeated doses of a diluted and succussed substance, they will experience different sensations and feelings, different aches and pains, different thoughts in their mind, different emotions, many, many changes. And these are carefully recorded and noted by the person who's proving, he's called the prover, of the remedy. And this is all compiled and collated, and there is a detailed questioning by the doctor who is conducting the proving. There is a person who is managing the proving of either one individual or most usually a group of individuals who are either single or double or triple blinded about taking that particular remedy. When an ill person or even an animal comes into the examination room, the doctor asks about the current complaints in great detail, about any previous ailments, their life history, about their the things that they're dealing with and coping with during their past and present. So the individual basically will open up and tell this information to the best of their ability and knowledge. This also includes learning about the person's preferences, about their personality, about their fears and their dreams and their relationships with other people in their life, in their family, at their work, and in their community, how they relate and how they filter and see the world. The homeopath looks for a theme or an essence that ties all of these symptoms together. The homeopath then studies the proving of the remedies to find a remedy that when given to a healthy individual, remember that's how the proving is done, the symptoms that come up for the person who's taking the remedy, a healthy individual will let us know what it will heal in the person who is ill. So they will be stimulated by the production of the same set of symptoms or the same essence as this individual. It is based on a principle, a universal law called likes cures likes. And when a homeopath is successful in finding the correct match, either the pet or the cattle is cured, or the child, teen, adult, senior, elderly, whatever stage of life you're in, you will get a healing response. So just to say it again, that there are symptoms in the individual and they are characteristic, that these are the things that the homeopath uses to identify what it is that has been changed in the normal state of the vital force and that needs to be healed. We are looking for changes, the dynamic changes that indicate to us there are symptoms telling us that there is something out of balance. And then the dilutions of the substance are tested on healthy people. Those are the provings. And the details about what symptoms the medicine is going to produce is recorded in a book like an encyclopedia. It's called the Materia Medica. Finally, the ill person or animal is questioned in a case intake in thorough detail. The homeopath records all the information in an unbiased manner. And then the symptom picture of this living organism, whether it is a pet or a person, and in agrohomeopathy, even a plant, is matched to the medicine that causes the same pattern of symptoms in the provers. That is likes, cures likes, and there's also the minimum dose that I didn't speak about. So we use a very minute, the smallest amount that will be a catalyst for the body to react and heal. And so it is not really the remedy that does the healing. It's a stimulation of the vital force of the individual. It's the person's own vital force that does the healing. We are just about ready to move on to our reading for today of the Organon. And we're going to read aphorism. I'm going to do a little bit about the preface because it's very much related to what we read the last session. Aphorism number 110, quote, "I saw, moreover, that the morbid lesions which previous authors had observed to result from medicinal substances when taken into the stomach of healthy persons, either in large doses given by mistake or in order to produce death in themselves or others," that sounds very much like he's talking about euthanasia, "or under other circumstances, accorded very much with my own observations, that's Hahnemann's observations, when he was experimenting with the same substances on myself and other healthy individuals. So what he's saying is when he was doing provings about substances and learning more about them. These authors give details of what occurred as histories of poisoning and as proofs of the pernicious effects of these powerful substances, chiefly in order to warn others from their use, partly also for the sake of exalting their own skill. Okay, so what he's talking about here is that when physicians used crude drugs as medicines, they were potentially harming and poisoning and causing toxicity and actually killing the subjects of those who they were experimenting with. And so when he tried using drugs in a crude form, he also felt very, very ill, and those people did. And that's why he went back to learning about dilutions and how those can be much more gentle in the healing response, but yet improvers could engender symptoms. And let's go on with the reading. These authors give details of what occurred as histories of poisoning and as proofs of the pernicious effects of these powerful substances, chiefly in order to warn others from their use, partly also for the sake of exalting their own skill, when, under the use of remedies they employed to combat these dangerous accidents, health gradually returned, but partly also when the person so affected died under their treatment, in order to seek their own justification in the dangerous character of these substances, which they then termed poisons. So when they were using these medicinal agents, these crude drugs, as supposedly forms of healing, and they told their patients that they were going to give this medicine to heal, and they died, they said, well, there was poison. This was a poison, and that is what was going on. None of these observers ever dreamed that the symptoms they recorded merely as proofs of the noxious and poisonous character of these substances were sure revelations of the power of these drugs to extinguish curatively similar symptoms occurring in natural diseases, that these pathogenic phenomena were intimations of their homeopathic curative action, and that the only possible way to ascertain their medicinal powers is to observe those changes of health medicines are capable of producing in the healthy organism. So what he's saying here is that when you give a drug to an ill person, you're not going to find out the answer. You're not going to be able to collate and record exactly those symptoms, the power of that medicine, the power of that drug. It's only when you do the recording of changes in health from a healthy individual that you're going to be able to find out what is the power within that remedy. For the pure, peculiar powers of medicines available for the cure of disease are to be learned neither by an ingenuous a priori speculations, nor by the smell, taste, or appearance of the drugs, nor by their chemical analysis, nor yet by the employment of several of them at one time in a mixture, which is what we now call a prescription, in diseases. It was never suspected that these histories of medicinal diseases would one day furnish the first rudiments of the true, pure materia medica, which from the earliest times until now has consisted solely of false conjectures and fictions of the imagination, that is to say, did not exist at all. Okay, that is aphorism number 110, and we're going to move right along to aphorism number 111, which is what we plan to do today. The agreement of my observations on the pure effects of medicines with these older ones, although they were recorded without reference to any therapeutic object, and the very concordance of these accounts with others of the same kind by different authors, must easily convince us that medicinal substances act in the morbid changes they produce in the healthy human body, and in bold or caps, he says, according to fixed eternal laws of nature, and by virtue of these are enabled to produce certain reliable disease symptoms, each according to its own peculiar character. So, tying in aphorism number 110, he tells us that all of those drug poisonings provide information about the effects of those drugs on individuals, and it would have to be collated and reaffirmed with provings and substantiated that those are truly the way that these medicines, these remedies in nature will work. And he says that what we are looking at are the morbid changes, the disease changes from a healthy state to a unwell state of discord. And that when we do this, this is fixed. This is nature. This is like the planets and the stars are going in their way, and the hurricanes and the floods, these are laws of nature. This is what happens based on the eternal truths. And we just have to be very, very observant of what we're looking at and utilize that information, record it, and do the best that we can to, when we are looking at an individual who comes in with disease state and brings certain symptoms, to match up those similar states, the mental, the emotional, the physical symptoms that we're looking at. What is the theme? What is the essence? And can we correlate it to a remedy that produces the same types of symptoms in a healthy individual, a prover? And he says that this is very, very reliable. And when I think about it, this means also that this is reproducible. These are experiments. And therefore, what we just learned about the new analytic tool, they are going to be able to reproduce over and over again based on the body's normal functioning, the changes, the dynamic changes in the blood pressure, the heart rate, the breathing, and all the other different body responses, the natural systems of the body. You're going to be able to record that when there is a matching remedy that will initiate healing to the vital force. And also, I'm thinking we know that there are bodies in space that, he was saying that this is really unseen, the vital force is unseen, yet we know that something is going on. And you can realize that years ago, we didn't know all of the bodies, the planetary bodies, the moons, the asteroids, or the comets, all those things that are in the sky, things that we cannot actually see. They're so far away. Yet, those forces of nature, the gravitational pulls, create a system of planets, a form of balance, a form of harmony and cycles of life that go on eternally. And through our research and skills of observation, astronomers and physicists have been able to determine that there's something else there. That before we knew that there was Pluto, they knew that there was something going up in space that was creating some sort of a force, a pull, a change, or holding something together. And in the same way, in our bodies, there is a force, a pull, and a change that is holding our bodies together. And we cannot see the vital force, but we can see the results of the dynamic changes in the vital force through the body's symptoms. And we are going to move right along to aphorism number 112 today, doing a lot of readings and a lot of study. We're going to move a little bit faster in one session since we're only doing one session a week instead of three. Aphorism number 112, Hahnemann states, in those older prescriptions of the often dangerous effects of medicines ingested in excessively large doses, we noticed certain states that were produced, not at the commencement, but towards the termination of these sad events, and which were of an exactly opposite nature to those that first appeared. These symptoms, the very reverse of the primary action, and he notes aphorism number 63, or proper action of the medicines on the vital force, are the reaction of the vital force of the organism. Its secondary action, and he refers us to aphorisms 62 to 67, of which, however, there is seldom or hardly ever the least trace from experiments with modern doses on healthy bodies, and from small doses, none whatever. In the homeopathic curative operation, the living organism reacts from these only so much as is requisite to raise the health again to the normal healthy state. And here he refers to aphorism 67. So aphorism 112 is comparing a heavy crude dose, a dose given in a large quantity, and a dose given in a minute, in a minimal dose quantity, and how the vital force, our bodies, will react to such medicines which are imposed upon the body to change the dynamism, to change the response, to if you're having a hay fever with burny, runny nose and your eyes tearing and all those sorts of things, this is the body's response to something. And whether it's an allergic response, histamine response, whatever it is, in contemporary traditional Western medicine, they provide you a suppressive agent, a crude drug that will tone down the body's response. What it's doing is toning down the ability of the body's own immune system to keep giving us these signals, to keep telling us there's an imbalance, and we need to take care of it in a similar method, to give the body something that it recognizes as in harmony and in resonance with it, so that the body can increase its vibration to throw off the disease. And so he's telling us that at the beginning of aphorism number 112, it appears that by giving this crude drug, that there's a good response, that the person is getting better, that they no longer have the symptoms of the hay fever or the allergic response of the histamine. Yet, toward the end of dosing, there is going to be a response that is going to be much what I keep calling rebound, the opposite of what you want to happen. So you're going to see a worsening of a condition. Or if it's not that, the body's going to look for another outlet. How else can it tell you that something is wrong internally, something in that dynamic unseen force? And this is where we need to utilize our homeopathic principles of primary and secondary action, initiating a response, an activation of the body's immune system, and then the secondary response of healing and pushing off whatever it is that's negative. So whether it's an emotional response, a physical response, a mental response, homeopathy approaches healing on all levels, not just removing a physical. And it all has to be thematically all together. You look at the whole person holistically. We have a few more minutes left. And we've had a quiet listening audience today. Oh, there's a guest here. I haven't paid any attention. And maybe I'll just find out who it is that is listening, and I'm really appreciative. So whoever it is could be sleeping. Sometimes you turn the radio on, and you just let it run, and you don't really are not really activated. But this is the first time I've ever tried the chat board on the Blog Talk Radio, and it's exciting to try that. There is just a few more minutes left for a complete 60-minute show, and I want to thank everybody for listening. Might as well go ahead and read aphorism number 112 because it's fairly short. But see, we did 111, 112, and 113. The only exceptions to this are the narcotic medicines, as they, in their primary action, take away sometimes the sensibility and sensation, sometimes the irritability. It frequently happens that in their secondary action, even the moderate experimental doses on healthy bodies, an increased sensibility and a greater irritability is observable. So he talks in the Organon quite a bit about the use of opium and morphine, and we use these drugs in traditional medicine quite often to stabilize an individual, to let their bodies heal, to quiet them down when they're in excruciating pain, when there's been an emergency, when there's been an accident. It's frequently used to have these types of poppy derivatives because it will slow down the body's activity and reduce the sensibility and sensations and alleviate pain and enable people, the surgeons, to work on them and get them into a better state of health, put them back together, and it is very, very useful. But he indicates here that the continued use of these kinds of narcotic medications, number one, they can be very, very addictive, and you can be dependent upon them, but in their secondary action, it does the reverse. It doesn't just quiet the irritable system and heighten the sensibility. It will actually make them even more irritable, more sensitive to outside forces or even hallucinating or other kinds of emotional, mental disabilities or imbalances and disorders. We have only a minute left to the show, and I want to again thank you for listening. This is a new experience for me to do a whole hour of talking by myself. I welcome callers. If you have any comments, I welcome comments and questions. I can only do my best to answer. And until next Monday, we will have again the study of the Organon, who's reading the Organon. And on Wednesday, I'm looking forward to seeing you or hearing you on the show about agrohomeopathy, using homeopathy in your organic garden, and on Thursday, vaccinations and your rights in the U.S., learning about the legal system. Thank you so much for listening. Take your Organon off the shelf and read it.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with host Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to take your Organon off the shelf and read it.